What now, Democrats? That's the question we will address this hour in light of last week's election results in Wisconsin. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, November 13th. Our first guest in this hour is the editor of the Capital Times, Paul Fanland, who wrote a column on what progressives and others who were disappointed in the re-election of Governor Walker and an even stronger GOP legislature should do now, rather than feel down and out. After 7:30, we will ask the former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, Joe Winicky, what went wrong and what he thinks about calls by some that the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin ought to step down. Was what happened last week the party's fault? If you would like to join in with your thoughts for either of our guests, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome first Paul Fanland, who is the editor of the Capital Times. His column that he wrote the day after Governor Walker's reelection victory was titled, In Tuesday's Wake, A New Call to Action. And we've posted that column on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. He joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Great to be with you.
So, a new call to action. What is the new call to action?
Well, I think, Joy, that the time for the what I call the Walker obsession among Democrats and progressives is at an end. I think it's time for the people who have been so focused on the governor for the last 4 years through the protests, through the recall, and through this election to acknowledge that he's won election 3 times. And instead of having a sort of a generalized disdain for the governor, to focus on constructive individual areas going forward. In Madison, where four or five voters traditionally favor Democrats and favored Mary Burke in this election, there's a lot to be done. We have lots of local issues around racial equity. The race report that came out last year, Wisconsin Public Radio co-sponsored an event earlier this year with the Capital Times on that subject. And there's going to be more on that, but there's lots of other ways of volunteering in schools, of getting involved in other sorts of local and also statewide issues where if one has a sort of a generalized disdain for the governor, my point would be to channel that into topics like K-12 education or the UW's Madison or UW systems stature, reproductive rights, environmental issues, consumerism, take that passion and put it and apply it to a specific area would be my thought out of this. And I've written extensively and critically about the governor over the last 4 years, so this probably applies to me as well. But this is what my reaction was out of that election that morning.
So instead of being down and out, depressed or angry, and seeking revenge, you're saying apply your passion to a cause that you think needs it right now.
Absolutely, and I talk to a lot of people, a lot of Madisonians, a lot of people who have been leaders, business leaders, governmental leaders, education leaders in Madison, and have been kind of having that conversation. How can I think your next guest, Joe Winicky, will be talking about sort of the Democratic tactical, strategic sort of redirection going forward. But mine was more a voice to my readers about sort of moving on beyond this and not being so disheartened as to give up and abandon and reapply their passion, I think.
Yeah. Well, it was written, at least I saw it, the day after the election. And Democrats, progressives were feeling really depressed on that day in particular. Why do you suppose what happened?
Well, lots of people have different explanations. I think that nationally and in the state of Wisconsin, there is a lot of disappointment and anger among a lot of people across the state about their economic situation and their prospects for their fortunes improving over time out of the Great Recession of the last decade. And that's continued, I think, well into this decade. I think the I think there's a generalized blame toward government for not doing more on that, whether that's well-founded or not. I think that occurs. And the Republicans have done a much better job of appealing to that disenfranchised, disappointed, average Wisconsin voter by pointing to what they would claim is the relatively better deal of a public school teacher, a public employee, or a government program than the than the Democrats have done of pointing to the enormous wealth disparity and some of the regressive sorts of tax changes. So I think the Republicans in the state and the Republicans nationally have done a wonderful job of controlling the narrative coming out of the suffering.
Yeah. So why, Paul, do you think that in Wisconsin and other states there were huge Republican wins in terms of in Wisconsin for governor and for state legislature, yet there were also wins for liberal causes, I guess, for lack of a better term, like raising the minimum wage?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's along the same lines that I think people, a lot of people, look at a minimum wage and look at it in isolation and say, that's fair, that's a good idea, but somehow they don't attach the ability to get that done, to do it fairly, and then to sort of run things. They don't associate that capability, that perceived capability, with the Democratic brand at this point.
Yeah.
And it's it's cyclical. Obviously, 2008, 2010, 2012 were all different elections, and 2016 will be different again. So my point in the column was to say that this, I've been watching and covering politics since I was a young reporter here when Lee Dreyfus was governor. So I've watched a lot of swings that seemed that they were never going to swing back, and yet they always do. And so I think the point is to keep one's chin up and work on the areas and lead where one can.
Yeah, as we know that Governor Walker opposes raising the minimum wage. So what are the opportunities for progressives when it comes to issues of economic justice?
Well, that's a good question. I think what the leadership can do is to highlight the differences. I'm not very optimistic about the opportunities when the Republican leaders pretty much don't even engage the question or don't want to consider it or don't want to hold hearings on that kind of legislation. I'm trying to leave the vitriol behind the election, but again, having watched Wisconsin politics for 30 years, I've never seen a situation through other Republican leaders in which, if you're not part of my narrow majority, I'm not your governor, almost seems to be the attitude. And I know conservatives very much disagree with that analysis, but that's what it feels like to a lot of us in Madison, a lot of us who are progressive.
We are talking with Paul Fanland. He is the editor of the Capital Times, talking about a new call to action for Democrats, for progressives, for those who are critical of Governor Walker. Now what? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you have plans to stay politically active if you were disappointed in last week's election results? Is there some issue that you plan on continuing working on, an issue that you are concerned about? We are discussing what Democrats can do now as individuals. We'll talk some more in our next half hour about what the Democratic Party should be doing and whether changes are needed there. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about a new call to action for Wisconsinites who are disappointed in last week's election results. We are talking with the editor of the Capital Times, Paul Fanland, who says critics of Governor Walker should dial down the vitriol and instead focus on ideas and action to make Wisconsin better. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Paul, in your column, you had some advice for the news media as well. What are you calling on the media to do?
Well, I think the one of the topics that may come up on your air from time to time is the change in the news media, the size of the news media. And that certainly is different. When I was a young reporter covering the legislature and the governor's office in the 1980s, there were probably about twice as many reporters as there are now at the Capitol. But I think it's really imperative, and I would say this, if it was a Democratic administration, I saw a thematic reason to. With this administration, I think it's going to be incumbent on the press to shine a bright light as privatization moves come forward, whether that's with the retirement system, prisons, power plants, schools, the movement away from public schools, and scrutinize who stands to benefit financially from those kinds of moves. So to dig beyond the policy facade of it and get to that sort of question, because that's a movement across the country in Republican circles. I think adjacent to that or an adjunct to that is the degree to which tax cuts basically create another budget crisis. And so over time, we sort of structurally bleed government's ability to be successful in any way, which becomes sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy and sort of a vicious circle. So that's what I think the press should do. I had another theme in the column that I thought I'd mention here that I think is important, is that I'm struck over the last year or two by the number of business leaders, education leaders, university leaders who seem to be intimidated by the Republican wave in Wisconsin. And the Republican wave in Wisconsin has only grown stronger in the last couple of weeks. And I know that some of them would find it impossible to speak out too forthrightly, but I think when people can on a specific issue, whether that's a medical expert on an issue associated with reproductive rights or a business leader stepping out against the mainstream of the business lobby in the state, that they really absolutely need to. Because I think my perception is that there's more a sense of intimidation. All the governors I've covered and known certainly notice who their supporters and non-supporters are and react to that. But I would say that we've reached a climate in which that's more severe. So those were two other themes that I wanted to get to.
I want to follow up on that business leaders and university leaders and others should not be intimidated and speak out and provide information on the issues of the day, the issues that will be before the state legislature. But we also hear from the Republican-controlled state legislature that the agenda might be focusing in on the University of Wisconsin, for example, saying we need to make sure that the professors are in the classroom. We need to make sure that the research dollars are being spent appropriately. We need to maybe punish the UW and not give the UW the money it's asking for because it canceled classes for a presidential appearance. I mean, there is some retaliation going on here.
I believe there is, and I'm coming into your show and preaching moving beyond the vitriol and moving to the next stage. But I do find very troubling an undercurrent of the Republican message being an anti-intellectualism. So there's a fight across the state to sort of to focus negatively on this wonderful university. And I really wonder what kind of message it sends when university leaders go out to recruit the best and brightest, the kind of researchers who will bring in massive amounts of research money to fuel our economy, look and have a choice between us and Stanford or MIT or some other great research university and say, do I really want to go into a climate in which the top of State Street, the legislators of the Capitol have that attitude towards what we're doing. And that's a worry of mine.
Let's go to the phones. Ron in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Ron.
Hi, good morning. You know, one of the things that I think we need to not ignore is the broader, the national level, the legislation brought through by the Democrats. And one of the things that I think that the Republican Party does a lot better is when they pass a piece of legislation, even if it's not exactly what they want, like a tax cut, they'll say that's a good tax cut, that's good legislation, let's keep going forward. But like the health care law, you know, that law has been attacked on both sides, you know, and so, you know, liberals don't say, hey, that's a good law, that's great, you know, we want to go forward. They come back and they say it's a bad law. And so if we take into consideration the fact that elections are won by those people in the middle, people who are, quite honestly, not very well-versed in politics, all they see is that, you know, this Democratic legislation is just attacked on all sides and it's bad, and that all the stuff that the Republicans do, even though there might be a side that doesn't like it, there's definitely, you know, a bunch of people behind it that support it. So, hey, you know, why not? Let's go with them.
So, Paul?
Well, I think that's a brilliant point, actually. I think you make it very articulately. I think that going back on the Affordable Care Act, the willingness of the Obama administration and Democrats to accept its labeling as Obamacare, those kinds of labels and the messaging is so powerful, and it's stuck, and it isn't about affordable health care. It's associated with a president who's turned out to be controversial. One of my favorite slogans that the Republicans have brilliantly attached is the death tax, even though most people, even with the old levels of estate taxes, would not have been affected by it. The calling it a death tax and framing it the way it's been framed, Republicans managed to gain a lot of support in opposition to it among Democratic people Democrats who will have no exposure to it. And I think over time, you're absolutely right that the Republicans have done a better job. And I think prescriptively, the Democrats have to think about that both in the state and nationally.
Yeah, let's go to Chuck in Oregon. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, to quote your guest for a previous statement he made, this is going to be a really anti-intellectual or non-intellectual call, because my assessment is that more people agreed with what Governor Walker is doing, what he was proposing, the direction he's taking the state, than what Mary Brooks said she was going to do. And another thing is...
Well, because we're so short on time, Chuck is saying suck it up, that the state, for the most part, the majority of the state agrees with what the Republicans and Governor Walker want to do.
I wouldn't argue with the caller. I think he's right. I think that the point I would make is that were there to be a Democratic governor and a Democratic legislature which had these narrow victories and then ignored and didn't have sort of a shared governance approach to the state, the right and the conservatives would be just as unhappy. What I find, I've written extensively and repeatedly about this, is that the 46-47% who did not vote for Governor Walker, it's not that they don't have a loud voice. They have no voice in what's occurring in the state. They're pretty much shut out of everything. And that's a change, and I think that has fueled some of the some of the anger to a lot of the anger to this point.
Yeah, let me very briefly. There were the left wing of the Democratic Party, the more progressives, think that Mary Burke was too conservative. They thought that someone like State Senator Kathleen Vinehout should have been the candidate. Do you think it would have been a different outcome if there was an even more liberal Democratic candidate?
I don't. I know I disagree with some of my progressive friends on that. I think Mary Burke ran a highly credible, smart campaign, presented herself well, and presented a nice contrast to the governor. I think it was a referendum on Scott Walker, and don't think it would have changed much. Particularly, I think she stayed off of Act 10 and the whole public employee union issue that fueled the protests. So no, I don't. Mm-hmm. I thought she was a good candidate.
Just a minute to go. How hopeful are you that the political left might return to a position of prominence in the not too distant future?
I think on ideology and in the interests of the public, I'm fairly optimistic. I'm somewhat pessimistic about the degree to which there hasn't been more outrage about what I consider to be voter suppression efforts through voter ID and through a reapportionment process. And I've been watching reapportionment for 30 years, never been quite sort of putting a thumb on the scale is what concerns me for the near term. In the long term, I'm more optimistic.
Well, we'll leave it there for now, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon. Thanks very much for being here.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Paul Fanlon, editor of the Capital Times. His column in Tuesday's Wake, A New Call to Action, is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up next, and then we will welcome in Joe Winicky, former Democratic state lawmaker, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. And we'll talk more on what Democrats need to do now in light of the election results. This is the Ideas Network.